Today, we're joined by four-time Ironman finisher and best-selling author Chris Swanson to discuss a wide range of topics, including making a comeback, character, physical fitness and how it affects every area of your life, achieving your dreams, and even Chris's perspective on law enforcement and what cops today are doing right and wrong. And I gotta say, this was an extremely powerful conversation and we learned tons and we hope that you will too. Little disclaimer though, we did have a slight malfunction with our audio equipment, so the audio isn't up to our usual standard, but we thought that the conversation was so good, had so much depth, so much inspirational content that we wanted to make sure that we did release it for you. So we apologize for this. We ask you to forgive us this time as we've now solved the problem for future episodes so it won't ever happen again. And we know that this episode will encourage you, inspire you, and we can't wait for you to hear it.
Hello, this is Danny Campisi, and welcome to the Fight the Current podcast. I'm joined in the studio today with my co-host, best friend, and business partner, Aaron Thomas. And today we are joined with special guest, Chris Swanson.
What's up, Chris?
What's up, fellas?
So this is episode 13.
Done, man.
I know. It took us forever, but we finally got it.
That's right.
Chris is a four-time Ironman finisher, which for you guys who don't know what Ironman is, what that is a 2.4 mile swim,
right?
112 followed by 112 mile bike ride.
Not a bike ride. It ain't a ride. It's a 112 mile cycle race.
Okay. 112 mile cycle race.
I don't have a basket on the front. I don't have reflectors on my wheels, but keep going.
True. Like two podcasts ago, the beach cruiser.
And here you go.
So followed by a marathon, not a walk. But a run.
26.2 miles.
Right. So you're the author of two books. I got one here in front of me, Tin Man to Iron Man.
Right.
The other one, what's the other one called?
Blood Guts, Things That Drive You Nuts.
I love that cool title, man.
Yep. And I got a third one in the works called Police, an Endangered Species.
Ah, nice.
That's a good title.
Yep. Because you're also a law enforcement officer. Under sheriff of Genesee County in Flint, Michigan, and you're a motivational speaker. So that's awesome. We're excited to have you on. I just want to jump right in here. You know, just given the fact that we gotta get into some meat right away, meat and potatoes. You wrote this book, Tin Man to Iron Man, 26.2 Proven Ways to Crush Your Failures and Transform Your Life Today. I just want to talk to you about, obviously, the name implies, and I've read the book. A lot of people in my family have read the book. Thousands and thousands of people that I've known have read the book.
Yeah.
It's a great book. I just want to jump right into, in what ways were you a tin man?
Yeah.
And how did you overcome that long term?
Number one, I was a fat kid growing up. And I was always picked last for teams. And I, for some reason, always was a skin, not a shirt for the fellas. You know what I'm talking about. And never the captain of teams. And I tell you, I just wasn't an athletic kind of kid, even though I had a desire. Fast forward, I played baseball in a summer league for 8 years, and I did well. I went to a big school in my ninth grade year after we moved, and I got cut from baseball. That was a very crushing blow to me. And I didn't compete for 14 years after that. At the same time that's going on, I probably had a gift of drive and motivation and the energy. But I grew up in an environment that didn't really allow me to prosper. I had to go dig it myself. And so I look at the background. I love my family. I had a great family, had a great upbringing, but I'm just different. And that with the physical part of it, I realized that many, many people start up one way and they are very shallow and fragile. And they need to get some scars, some bruises. And they need to have some dents in order to be battle tested and proven. So throughout my journey as a police officer and as an athlete, it was a point in time in 2000, January 1st, I looked at myself in the mirror and I'd already been a cop for 6 years. And I said, what the heck happened, man? How did I let myself go? I was not fat. I was, I don't want to say soft. I was kind of like in between. I tried to work out at the gym, but I really didn't know what I was doing. I ran a little bit of 5Ks here, 5Ks there. And I was really good at police work, but I compensated my body by just wearing uniforms and vests. Anyhow, So I decided at that point, I'm going to do something crazy. And that was in January. And then 11 months later, I decided I'm going to do my first bodybuilding show. So I committed in January. I did my first show that November on the stage, came in 4th out of 7, did 4 more bodybuilding shows, all natural. I started to create a lifestyle, and I started running marathons because some guy said, man, do you know only 1% of the world's population can ever run a marathon? I'm like, well, I don't want to be that guy. So I ran a couple marathons, 1%. And one thing led to another. Yeah. And this is going to be a long story to a short answer. So here you go. I was talking to a guy in 2005 who was an ER doc. His name is Al Jansen. And he said, man, I got to see you. So I went over his office and he had a bib and he had some pictures and he had a medal. And it was the Ironman medal that he had just received from the Florida Ironman in 2005, Panama City Beach, Florida. He's like, dude, I can give all the drugs in the world, but you have got to finish an Ironman, because once you cross the finish line, they say your name and they say you're an Ironman. It's the biggest adrenaline rush you could possibly imagine. I'm telling you. So I thought, people like me finish this, because I was a bigger guy. Now I was now 5 years into bodybuilding. And he's like, I'm telling you, you're going to be passed by soccer moms and 72-year-old guys. Trust me, it's an individual event. So I kind of sat in my mind in 2006. I decided that year I'm going to sign up for it. And Ironman, there's only 26 of them in the nation or the world at that point. And it fills up very quickly. So I logged on a Sunday morning. And it filled in 22 minutes, 3,000 spots. And I decided at that point, I'm in. I got a whole year to train. And a year later, the first Saturday of November 2007, I'm on the beach in Panama City Beach, Florida. And I'm looking out at the Gulf of Mexico, and the buoys are from like here to Cuba. And I thought, I'm in. This is it. And so I finished the whole race. I'm sure we'll get into some of those things a little bit. And at the end, this is the key. This is how the book came. This is how the whole thing came. In the end, I was coming down the chute, which is awesome. You ever watch ESPN and see the finish of an Ironman? There's a chute where you come down the last quarter mile and people are going nuts and lights everywhere. And the announcers announcing all these people. And I crossed the finish line. They said, Chris Swanson from Davidson, Michigan, you are an Ironman. And man, it gets me choked up just saying this. I'm not kidding you, man. And I look to my wife, my left. My wife is there. She's got a huge banner. And man, I cross the finish line. I can't find her. And bam, I go down. Right into the emergency room. That's where she finds me.
Oh, really?
Later. IVs on both arms. I'm in a big bear blanket because I was hypothermic, dehydrated. My sugar crashed. I got my medal on, though, man. I figured if I die right now, I'm going to die with an Ironman medal. So after about an hour and a half, 2 hours in the ER, I get up. I make it to the hotel room. I lay down. I asked my wife. I said, let me see the banner you held up. And in the top right corner, she had made this banner and had a bunch of my friends and family sign little messages. And a guy named Jack Pichette, he wrote on the top right corner, Swanson, congratulations. You are officially no longer a Tin Man. You're an Iron Man. Mm-hmm. And that's what really brought it all together. Because tin looks good on the outside. It's shiny. You can mold it. But under pressure, it collapses. And so I have been on a mission, spiritually, physically, mentally, that do not build any of those on a tin foundation. Build it on an iron foundation. And that message is in that book, and that book became a bestseller.
That's awesome, Chris. So let's talk about it. There's no question that it's physically taxing. Let's talk about the mental barriers. What would you say was harder, the mental barriers that you were constantly fighting with or the physical aspect of it?
Well, first of all, I had gone into Ironman already doing marathons and already doing bodybuilding shows. And anytime you get close to a competition, like for bodybuilding, you're talking about dieting down 12 weeks out, 6 weeks out, 4 weeks out, 2 weeks out. I mean, it is. And for 90 seconds on a stage. So I've already been used to the prep. Marathon training, you know, you're talking running, you know, getting up on a Saturday morning at 6 o'clock in the morning, rain, hail, sleet, or snow, and doing a 20 mile. I mean, most people don't drive that far without getting tired and stopping. I mean, the training of any extreme event, and anybody who out there is watching, I respect smaller events, but I'm talking extreme events. Bodybuilding shows are extreme events because you have to do a whole year. Marathons, half marathons. When I started training for Ironman, the training itself is 6 days a week. And you're a year out. So doing multiple 20-mile runs 3, 4, 5 months out is not uncommon. Doing miles in an open water lake swim is not uncommon. Getting on your bike on a Saturday and riding, cycling and pounding out 6 hours of cycling, you're doing that every week for the entire year. So the mental training is starting to kind of develop as you're training. But nobody trains for Ironman by doing an Ironman. You usually do all these different segments, and then it all comes together on the day of the race. So to answer your question, you have to go into it knowing you're going to finish. Thus, in the book, I have one of my statements, finish or die trying. When I hit the beach, there was nothing that would have stopped me from finish unless I died. I knew I had already finished before I even started. I just had to put in the miles. And I knew that I have strong and weak points. I was very confident in my swim. I wasn't a great swimmer, but I wasn't a bad swimmer. It was in the ocean, the Gulf of Mexico. And I, you know, I just had a stroke. There's 3,000 people get launched at the same time. And so there's a lot of anxiety and there's a lot of, you know, nervousness because you're kicked in the face and you're swallowing water. You can't get in a rhythm. But when I did the first 1.2 mile lap, because then you get out and do it again, I'm thinking, man, I just did this. If you ask me what the most grueling part of the entire thing, it was not the swim. It was not as much the run. It was the bike. Being locked in the pedals, being on your elbows and standing up for 6.5, 7 hours, 112 miles, that was mind-numbing to me because it's the same grind. It like never ended. And then thinking at towards the tail end, you know, how about this? You're doing 90 miles on the bike. I mean, 90 miles. It can mess with you when you still think I have 22 more miles to go. Even when you've done 90, get to 100. You've cycled the whole century. You've been on the bike for 100 miles. You've already did 2.4 in the water. You still have 12 miles to go, and then you've got to run a marathon. That's when you start really. That's when you have to be mentally strong. But the way I did the whole thing is I broke it down. In the swim, I just swam to the next buoy. And when I got there, I swam to the next one. And when I got out of that swim, I had one down. I jumped on the bike. Just go to the first aid station. Go to the second one. Do the first half, 56 miles. As soon as I got 56.1, I'm on the back end. Just do another 10 miles. Just do another 20 miles. Do another one. Then you get down with the bike. I just got to run 1 mile at a time and do that 26.2 miles again, and I'm in. So you have to break it down into small bites. And it, all those are humongous mental barriers. But I've always said, and that's why I can do anything as an Ironman. I mean, it literally takes your mind to a different zone. When your body says no, your mind has to say go. And then your body will obey.
So in what ways has your perspective changed since you completed that first Ironman?
Oh, man. Well, the doctor's right. My buddy Al Jansen was right. When you cross the finish line and they say your name, it is like a tremendous amount of dopamine release that you can take on the world. And then reality starts hitting because when you start talking about the distances, 140.6 miles, people can't already grasp the concept of doing that. And then when I talk to people, I'm like, hey, what time did you get up? And usually people are like, you know, 6:30. Okay, think of this. My fastest Ironman started at 7 a.m. So whatever you've done at 7 a.m., you just fast forward, and at 9:11 p.m., that's when I finished. So think of all the things you do from 7 a.m. to 9:11, and that was my fastest Ironman. When I start talking about that stuff, in my own mind, I'm thinking, that's unbelievable. Like, how did I do that? How do these people do that? It's because you push yourself mentally, physically, and spiritually to a level where you think you're going to break, but you don't break. It pushes you to another level that you could not have seen until the ceiling was broke. That's why I kept doing them. And that's why I still train, because Ironman takes you to a level that if I said I want to scale that building, I'm going to scale the building. I would never have thought that way had I not done an Ironman.
So that's you have
extreme. There's people that beat cancer that have a totally different perspective on life. There's people that have overcome massive obstacles that have a totally different way of looking at life. And that's what Ironman does. I became a late blooming athlete. And so for the last 19 years, I've been an athlete, making up for all those years I didn't when I was in high school.
Hmm. So do you have any other races planned? Like, what's your next step? You've done the Ironman. Do you have anything after this?
Yeah, I've been doing it in my fifth Ironman, not this year, but next year. That's on the plan. I do a lot of, you know, endurance races. I do a lot of training now, but the competition, and this sounds really bad, and I'm trying not to do this, but I used to run 10-mile races as a competitor. Like, that doesn't do anything for me anymore. So I'd rather run 10 miles and then, you know, do 2 miles in the water on my own. To do an extreme event like that, it's another part-time job. So it's very difficult to schedule an extreme event unless you have all the time to train for it. So I train 6 days a week. Last year I did a Spartan Beast. So there's three different levels of the Spartan race. I did the Beast level, which is the highest level. It's a little over 12 miles and 36 obstacles. That was very difficult. I've done a bunch of half Ironmans, which is half the distance. It's a 70.3. But on the horizon in 2020 is going to be that full Ironman in the fall.
So it seems like, from what I'm understanding and from reading one of your books, that this Ironman was kind of the catalyst to change in your life. And it really was the moment that Chris Swanson became Chris Swanson. And now we see you today. You know, I've been in an audience with 15,000 people seeing you speak.
It's so incredible.
And I'm sure you've spoke to bigger crowds or more often, but it's crazy to see the change. So I guess if that's the catalyst, what would you say, what part did it play and what part does physical fitness play in your psyche when it comes to all areas of your life? It seems like the physical side then affected the mental side.
Yeah. They complement each other. And I'll challenge anybody watching right now. Don't think you have to do an Ironman to have an Ironman moment like I did. You have to do something that you know is going to push you to your ultimate limit, whatever that is. I don't know what it is. It's different for everybody. But to answer your question on that moment, man, I got saved. I grew up Lutheran. I got saved as a young kid. I say young kid. I was like 18, 19. I had like a salvation transformation. That was a great deal, but I can't pick a date. I got married July 23rd, 1994 to a hot blonde that I'm still married to. I remember that date, but it wasn't that moment. I had two great kids. I mean, for those that are out there, I mean, you learn as a dad to become closer to your kids as they get older. I mean, I love the days of my kids' birth, but I was still a young kid myself. The moment I crossed the finish line as an Ironman was an immediate transformation in my life. It made me a better dad. It made me a better husband. It made me a better believer. It made me a better businessman. It made me a better speaker. It gave me a level of confidence and credibility that will last to the day I die. It takes you to that moment where you reach a euphoria, and it was all self-made. Nobody gave it to me. Nobody ran my miles. That's why I tell people in my messages, you transform whatever it is from tin to iron. Let's just say you are financially blown up. Like you have not figured out. You've built this facade of money and finances on tin. Destroy it, break it down, start fresh, and build a financial empire on an iron foundation, and you're going to have a tin man to iron man financial transformation. Spiritually, your marriage. There's guys that suck at being a husband. They think they know it. They tell their wife, you know, hey, you know, take me who I am. No. No, you're building your whole relationship on tin, and one little thing's going to shatter it. Why don't you be a man and learn how to be a husband? Why don't you be a man and learn how to be a dad and build your family on an iron foundation so when the fight does come to you, you're going to be ready to go? The reason physically it's so important is because whether you like it or not, human nature is to look at people and judge within 90 seconds if you're going to listen to them or not, if you're going to believe them or not, if you're attracted to them or not. It's all first impressions. In police work, it's called command presence. I can walk into a scene and I can tell you right now who the big mouth is, and I can tell you right now who the one I have to be careful about, just by the how they act. When I walk into the scene, they're judging me. Can this guy handle himself? Or if they look at me like, oh no, this guy, he's no match. I want to walk in and have people know, if I'm going to take him on, I'm going to have a fight in my hands. I was at a party store. I think I told the story. I was at a party store, and I carried my pistol on the right side, and I had my jacket off, and a guy walks in and immediately looks down. He goes, hey, can I have that? I said, if you can take it, you can have it. And now immediately, you know, it was like a psychological battle, because right. Especially the older I get, I have no shame, and I'm a 46-year-old machine. I'm faster, bigger, stronger than I ever have been. I work my guts out. I eat clean. I train 6 days a week because I know every day I get older, the pool of people that are healthy is getting smaller and smaller because people use sad excuses like, oh, I got this injury from this and I'm too fat here and I'm too busy here and I'm too, no, you're not. That's all an excuse not to be physically dominant because I know when I feel good, I think clear. And when I think clear, I train harder. And so they work together. You cannot be mentally sharp and physically unfit. You cannot be physically fit and mentally weak. Together they work, and you add competition on top of that. I'm telling you, it's what I call a cockroach mentality. They got to cut my head off to stop me.
So what do you tell the person that they just lack that motivation? They want to achieve this stuff, but there's something in the way that's keeping them from their potential.
Or they're so discouraged maybe from life and so far down that they can't see doing an Ironman. They can barely see walking to the mailbox. So
it's true.
What would you say to that person that's at the bottom?
I got to say that I appreciate the identification as being motivational. Because I do believe I motivate people by my excitement and my stories and my challenges. But motivation by definition means I have to move you. I have to like physically push you. If I stop pushing or I go somewhere and you're not strong, then you stop moving. I like to believe I'm an inspirational guy. Like I breathe a new life into people in order for them to take on a new life. That way, when I leave, they're still alive. So I like to use inspirational moments. Like Ironman to me was an inspirational moment to me because it launched me into a new era. Dr. Al Jansen, who he knows, I give credits all the time. He was an inspirational person in my life. The moment he said, you can do it. He didn't need to motivate me. He just needed to breathe into life something that was dead. So to the people that are saying, I can't walk to the mailbox, I'm not going to pick you up and carry you there. You have to be so inspired for whatever reason to get up and struggle to get to that mailbox. And then tomorrow, go to the next mailbox. Break it down to little bites. I always talk about my journey of Tim and Ironman, the things that it actually taught me. And if I may, I'm going to give you these five things. And these things work for me in order to get that person off the couch, to get that person back on their finances, to get that person reestablished for the relationship. Whatever the struggle is, you get to fill in the blanks.
What is up, guys? We hope you're enjoying this conversation as much as we are with Chris Swanson.
I have to say, Chris is probably easily my favorite interview that we've done so far. Four-time Ironman finisher. The stuff that he does physically. Sit working out, training 6 days a week. But then also the mental mindset that he has, it's just crazy.
Crazy. And I know we've both seen him several times speak live at big arenas, big audiences. And he's like caffeine.
He is.
You hear him, it's just like a jolt to your veins. So we just want to say for you guys who are watching this on YouTube, know that we also have an audio podcast. If you guys who are listening to this just on audio, know we have a YouTube channel. As far as our audio podcast, we're on iTunes, we're on Spotify, we're on Stitcher, not Google Music.
Not Google Music.
So sorry for you Google Music listeners. Well, actually, you're not listening to this because we're not on Google Music right now.
But if you did, check out Spotify. Spotify is a go-to. It's cross-platform. You can listen to it on iPhone. You can listen to it on Android. You can listen to it on your desktop. So Spotify is universal. Check us out there.
Right. Definitely subscribe to our YouTube channel. We've seen that list growing continuously since our first video came out with Morgan Kraft. Mm-hmm. And we just would love to hear your views. We'd love for you to comment. We'd love for you guys to, and when you do comment, we will read it on the air. We'll read your name. You know, we'll give you a shout out. We also have ideas of this adventure idea added to our channel.
Definitely. So for those of you that are checking us out on YouTube, it might not just be videos like this of our past interviews. It'll actually be videos of some of the adventures that we take, some GoPro footage, maybe some drone footage, some vlogs of the adventures that we do. So maybe rock climbing, skiing, snowboarding, stuff like that.
Whitewater rafting. We still got to get
exactly.
that.
Exactly. So we have a lot of stuff personally that we want to do adventurous in the realm of adventure. So
definitely, we'll have a camera rolling and we'll bring some of that stuff to you too.
If that's something you guys are interested in, just make sure you comment below and let us know if you would be interested in that. Definitely comment below in this video too. This interview with Chris Swanson, we'd love to hear what you think. We'd love to hear your thoughts, and we don't want to take much more of your time. So now for a word from our sponsors and back to the conversation with Chris.
Number one, you have to have a big, fat vision. Like, that's the first thing. When I was an Ironman, it was before I even ran the race. Like, I identified as an Ironman. I knew. I'm like, this is it. I'm going to do that. Before I wanted to be a millionaire and before I became, I said, I'm going to be a millionaire. I'm going to be financially fit, because there was a time I was $480,000 in debt and had a $36,000 credit card. And to think I'd be financially free was out of this world. It was impossible. To think I was going to, when I was 18 years old, I went to the sheriff's office and they asked me, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to run this place. Like, I knew back then. So you got to know in advance, one, right out of the gate, what is it you want to be? And once you identify that, start acting like it. Even before you have it, start acting like it. Start thinking like it. Start having the posture of it. Here's the second thing. Tell people. See, we live in a culture where we don't want to tell people what we're going to do because we think it's arrogant. We think it's cocky. You know what it does? It inspires people. Not everybody, because there's always going to be slugs who are going to try to pull you down, but it's going to inspire that one person, just like Al Jansen, and just like all the people who I have been able to inspire to do an Ironman or other physical events with me. Because once you tell people, you start getting a following, and people start watching you, and you're accountable. Like, people see you, and you're thinking, man, I can't let them down, which leads me to number three. Every time I felt like quitting, because you're going to feel like you want to die. Like, Ironman, in that experience, it's physically everything you've got. Like, there's no reserves left at the end. I always thought to myself, number three, my enemies want me to fail. My wife hates this point because she says, you're such a positive guy, brings it down negative. But that's the reality. I don't care what people say. There's friends around you. Like you two guys are best friends, but there's people that are around you that don't like what you're doing. And they may say, hey, great job. How's this? How's that? But deep down, they're like, it ain't going to work. And they're waiting for you guys to break this whole thing out. They're waiting for you to have a fight. They're waiting for you to do that. Because that's the society we live in. People do not like to see success. So I said to myself, I'm not going to give them that favor. I'm not going to give them that notoriety. I'm not going to give them a win for me not to finish. Otherwise, they win. So I had this huge vision. I told people what I was doing. I made sure that my enemies were not going to win. I broke it down in small little steps. I already kind of highlighted this in a second. I said to myself, like on the bike, I remember my first Ironman. You may have heard this, Danny. I taped a pack of Skittles on my handlebar, and yeah. I said, at mile 56, I'm going to have these Skittles. Not a second before. And as soon as my odometer rolled over to 56, I ripped them off my handlebars. It was a little treat. And then I said, I'm going to do this, this, do this, do this, do this.
I bet those are tasty.
I couldn't think about getting out of $480,000 of debt and then having a net worth. That's a financial wealth. I didn't think about that. What I thought about is paying off the first dollar and not wasting the other dollar. And I saw my money as seeds. And in fact, I give you a little small thing right here. How do you save $1 million? How do you guys save $1 million?
You save $1 at a time?
Yeah, $1 at a time. You save $1 a million times, you got $1 million, right? So when I was broke and had nothing in 2004, I said to myself, I will always carry a $100 bill. Because it's a reminder that this right here, if I save enough of them, will become 1,000, 10,000, 100,000, 1 million, 10 million, 100 million. That's it. So I don't worry about if I want to be a millionaire when I only have $100. I say to myself, I'm going to have $100. And if I save that $100 and I do it twice, now I have $200. And I just keep repeating the process. That's no different than running a race. It's no different than building relationships, starting business. You know, you can't get frustrated thinking, why am I not there? No. Ironman step number four, break it down into small victories. Don't worry about the big thing. That's the vision part of it. You break it down to small little victories. You add them all together and you win. Like, an Ironman is 140.6 miles. You don't get that the first hour. You have to put in the miles. They add it all together. And at the end, you get a medal. And the fifth step is this. Ironman number four, it's in Wisconsin. Horrible, hard, incredibly hilly bike course. They have these two hills. It's a double loop. They call them, I don't swear, but they call them the witches, but not with a W. And they actually have to walk their bike up the hill. And you got to do it twice. It's a double 40-mile loop. And that's where people fall out. I mean, ambulances are coming. People are dropping over, sliding down the hill. Oh, my gosh. It was the hardest bike race I've ever done in my entire life. There's 112 miles, right? At 108, after I finish the witches and I'm heading back to go do the run, I literally, with my buddy Casey, I pull over the side of the road, I click out of my pedals, and I lay on the ground, and I just look up. Like, we only have 5 more miles to go, but I couldn't go 1 more mile. I needed to take a break. I get done. We get off the bike. It's 5:30 now. I've never finished the run this late. I knew my run was going to, or the bike this late. I knew my run was going to be incredibly difficult. So Jamie, my hot blonde wife, was there, and I'm just about to take off. And I say to her, this is going to be a long night. And she knew I was in pain. I started the run, and Ironman many times is a double loop. So it's 13.1 and then another 13.1. But that second time that you're leaving, a lot of the finishers are already finishing. So there's people that are finishing and people that are doing that second loop, and it was crazy. At that second loop starts, I'm sitting in a chair just like this, and we pack our special needs bags. So you put things in there that you think you kind of want. And I was spent. I was like, checked out. And my buddy Casey's there. He's just like, come on, man, we got to go. And my son, Jordan, comes up. He's like, Dad, don't forget what you tell us. Finish or die trying. Finish or die trying. I'm like, I got it, buddy. I got it. And I get up and I start walking and I start jogging. And as God is my witness, I heard something behind me and there's little footsteps. And I look behind me, and it gets me choked up to this day. My wife, who had never run 3 miles in her life, ran 13.1 miles with me.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Step number 5, you cannot do it by yourself. Whatever 10-man Ironman version you're trying to make of yourself, whatever transformation, you cannot do it yourself. You grab somebody who's going to be there when nobody else says, nobody else ran with me. One person, the entire world population, ran with me and allowed me to finish. Step number 5.
That's inspiring. And your hot blonde wife, what's her name?
Jamie.
So Jamie then did something that got her, or she broke through mental barriers herself, because she ran then 13 miles when she never did 3. So that was awesome.
And mind you, that last 13 miles was not a full run. There are times that I collapsed, and I say that absolutely. I collapsed, and I would have her find out, like, how much time can I just sit here and lay down for a minute before I had to get up, because you have to finish by midnight. And she and my buddy Casey would be like, we've got a minute and a half, because we have to stay on pace. I mean, she not only was there to run, she was there. She encouraged me. And she just kept going and going. So yeah, there's more. We just didn't run. She rehabilitated me.
Yeah, it sounds like it. So just let's go into a little bit the police side. Obviously, that's a huge part of your life. I hate to jump around, but we want to make sure we cover all these topics in a short period of time. So how'd you get into that, and why are you so passionate about it?
Two answers. Number one, my dad was a Detroit police officer. So I grew up hearing police stories. He did 7 years on the job, right through the Detroit riots in 1967, 68, 69. So growing up, I'm the youngest of 4. I would always hear police stories. And my grandfather, his dad, did 32 years on the job. So I came from a law enforcement family. I'm the only one in my entire bloodline that has ever taken in generation number 3 and started in police work. So as I tell people, and those that are in public service or police work understand what I'm saying, you don't find it, it finds you. So I knew young that I was going to be in law enforcement. I was a terrible student in high school. I had a 1.9 grade point average. A counselor told me in my junior year, yeah, we can make it, baby. And my counselor in my junior year says, you are not going to be hired at 1.9. And I went, what are you talking about? Make a long story short, I ramped it up the last 2 years. I graduated 3.1, went to a local college. I was going right to the police department, police academy. And a guy said, who's on the police department in the same jurisdiction, said, man, you should just go to college and get a degree and hold off on law enforcement, the police academy. Just, it'll happen. I graduated high school at 17. So I got involved with this internship, and an African-American lady named Avon Burns encouraged me to go to do an internship at the sheriff's office. And in that internship is when I saw my first violent death. A guy blew his brains out all over the wall when his wife went to go get Burger King. She came back. He's still alive with a hole in his head and the guns laying there. And as an intern, I'm riding with the police officer and the medic that's going there, and I'm tripping out. It was 10:36 at night. I'll never forget the time. He's like, I sure hope it wasn't a shotgun. I get there and I can smell the blood, the gunpowder, the Burger King, and the lady screaming. And I was just like, oh my gosh. I was not able to comprehend that. And so I said, if I'm going to be a police officer, I better learn this. So I went to EMT school and became an EMT, and I was really good at that. So I actually became a licensed medic at 20, a year before I even became a cop. So that's how I got into public service. But the reason I get into public service is not because I heard police stories. It's not because of my grandfather, my dad, they had some influence. But all in all is I hate bullies. I hate people who pick on innocent folks. And I get to do something about it. Because when they call 911, it's their weakest, darkest moment. And I like to be that guy that's going to save them.
Yeah. What do you, like, how do you go out there knowing, in today's culture, there's a lot of, especially, you're probably going to touch on your new book that's coming up. But there's so much negativity, I feel like, that surrounds law enforcement.
Yeah. Police.
That it's like, essentially, they're bullying the whole police force that are keeping them safe. So how do you combat that? How do you see that in your line of work?
It's funny. I just did a huge conference that I put on myself called the Iron Life Conference in Arizona last week. And I told a bunch of cops there who are getting beat up like we all are across the country. Let me tell you what you're not. And I told these guys and these ladies, I said, number one, we're not hated. We're loved. There's a small percentage that hate police officers because we stand for authority, and they just hate authority, period. So you're not hated. The second thing is the public doesn't hate you. The media hates you. The public loves us. They still want you to be there. They still wave to you. They come to your parades. They come to your open houses. Number three, you're not brutal. You're the only profession on the planet that can take a human life. There's a force continuum. We could tell somebody to do something called verbal commands. They have to do it. If they don't, they go to jail. We can grab people, we can wrestle people, we can strike people, we can kill people, that force continuum. Nobody gets that. You're going to use force. It's the only profession that when that force is used, there's a tremendous amount of scrutiny over those decisions that are split second. So yes, the burden falls on us, but you have all that force. Brutality means that you abuse your force, but if you have the authority to use force and you justify it, it is what it is. That's why we're here. We use deadly force as the highest level to protect human life, ourselves included. The other thing is we're not racist. I tell people that. There are people that are racist, just like in every field, but right. Just because you're a black guy in the police world or a white guy in the police world or a female in the police world or an Asian American or whatever, don't think that that is what you are. You are law enforcement, because I know all those brothers and sisters I just mentioned. Not one time when we get a 911 call, do we sit there and ask, hey, is the victim white or black? Are they gay or straight? Are they Jewish, atheist, Catholic? Do they believe like me or do they not? We risk our lives to drive as fast as we can to get there to save your life at the risk of losing ours, and we don't care where you're from. That's the farthest thing from racism you can possibly imagine. Now, are there people that make bad decisions? Absolutely. That we eat our own. Those people are not part of law enforcement. We want nothing to do with them. And then I also tell them they're ordained by God, hands down. Number one, I know this because in the Bible, in Proverbs, it says iron sharpens iron, which means you sharpen each other. In every police funeral I've ever been to, no greater love is when one lays down his life for another. I also know that at the police memorial on Judiciary Square in Washington, D.C., there are four adult lions, two male, two female, in all four corners of the law enforcement police memorial, where almost 21,000 names are inscribed as giving their life in the line of duty, where a wall is so low that the little ones who we leave behind can go there and etch the names of their fathers and mothers. And on all four of those pillars are statements of force. And on one pillar, it says, when a wicked man flee and no one pursueth, the righteous are as bold as lions. So that's what I tell cops. Regardless of what the world says, you know you are righteous as a lion to protect the innocent people. So you keep doing what you're doing. That's why I love being a cop, and that's why I encourage people to do it. In spite of all that the media says we are, we know what we are, and we know what we're not.
That's such an important perspective, too, because oftentimes, I mean, the media has its narrative that we don't get to hear the other side. They're not out there interviewing the police officers. Right. They're just taking it, like, and twisting it. So it's so, I love that you covered that, Chris, because a lot of it, there's so much truth in it.
And Aaron, let me tell you this. We don't do us any favors either, because we got idiots out there that are planting guns on people. You got idiots out there that are covering and lying. That doesn't help the movement on our end. Trust me, we've got to smack our own people. And we do that. And if you take a public oath and you violate that, shame on you. And the second thing is we say something to the media and to the public that the public hates. And I don't know, I'm going to be the front runner. I'm going to be the person with the banner saying, stop doing this. We tell people, no comment, no comment. People hate no comment. Listen, if it looks bad, say, hey, listen, this doesn't look good. We're going to find out the facts. If it looks righteous, then say it. Hey, this looks righteous based on the facts that we have. We're going to keep looking into it. You may not agree with what we're going to find out, but we are lawmen, lawwomen. We operate on facts. We don't have an opinion. That's what we do. But nobody does that. Law enforcement, we don't want to talk to the media. We think the public is separate than us. Listen, we get our authority from the public. It's public trust. You know, you're the ones that give us the authority to police you, and we've got to respect that.
Right. So what are some of the toughest things that you've experienced and had to see and deal with in your line in police work?
Lawsuits. Scum-sucking, bottom-feeder plaintiff attorneys. Mm-hmm. When you do right and they still come after you, or you do wrong and it's an accident, not intentional, they come after you. And lawyers who make it their business to manipulate the facts and put their narrative out in a litigation, the complaint, and you cannot defend yourself because the process has to take place, but the media gets a hold of it and other people get a hold of it, and they take that first complaint that is written by a plaintiff's attorney and they treat it as gospel truth. And so you're always operating on the ninth inning, down by 10, two outs, full count. And so it's a claw back when I'm thinking, listen, you don't understand. Just for me doing my job, if I did right, then why is this going on? If I did wrong, then why are you trying to just destroy an entire career? And internally, when you have an employee that you fire, when it comes to government, they immediately sue. And it's so discouraging to see what people say about you when there's no truth to it. And there's no retribution. You can't fire back. That is the worst thing that I've dealt with. I've been named in countless lawsuits as a named defendant. I've been exonerated on every one of them, either by the judge or by a jury or through summary disposition. But I'm telling you, if you've never been sued, it is a very, very, very dark place to be. So hands down, I've seen hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dead and mutilated bodies. We had a shooting last night. A poor 18-year-old shot himself in the mouth and blew his jaw off the other side of the room. I've been to a house where mom and dad and four babies are all dead from carbon monoxide. I've been to where people in the book, I even explained where guys, half his parts are here and half his parts are there. Decomposed bodies, all sorts of, you know, pedophiles that have raped people and all sorts of crazes. It's unnerving. It's upsetting. But nothing gets blood boiling more than people saying something about you that you know is not true and you can't do anything about it. That's the worst part of the job.
Wow.
But it's crazy. Ready to go for this. Nothing to hide, nothing to fear. So they can say all that stuff. You just got to go through it. But if you don't give them anything to latch onto, all it is words. That's the nice thing about it. You know, you don't give them any ammunition. You just nothing to hide, nothing to fear. All right, I'm done on that.
Now, and I know you've talked about I'm going to go to the nothing to hide, nothing to fear comment. I know you've talked about, actually, last time I heard you speak, you talked about being the same man when the doors are shut that you are when you're in the lights. So let's talk a little bit about that. It's probably going to be one of the last topics we can really dive into, but let's talk about that.
Well, first of all, you've seen me on the big stage.
Right.
You talked to me on the phone setting this thing up, and now you're seeing me here. You've seen me on my video. You've read my. It's easy to be the same dude and the same girl all the time. That way, you don't have to be somebody different. Am I right? Am I literally the same person no matter where you are?
Oh yeah,
100%.
This conversation and the conversation we've had on the phone felt like I was listening to you speak when I've listened to you through CDs or audios as well as live. So
that's right. And I look at it this way: when you click your heels and take an oath, or you are overseeing any person, like a caregiver, whether you're in the ministry or whether you're in medicine or whatever, when you oversee people, I think you're held to a higher standard. And that higher standard requires you to have a deeper ethical foundation than any other person. I just believe it in my heart. That means that I cannot have one corner of my life that is unaddressed or that is dark, or something I don't talk about at parties because I want to keep one foot in the world. I can't have one thing. I can't be great to you and a jerk to my wife. Jerk to my wife means I can't be talking to somebody who's not my wife. I can't be having a girl best friend. I can't be taking a dollar thinking that nobody's going to look and tell people to do the right thing. You can't do that. There's not got to be, it goes back to the old Jewish law. When Passover came, they looked at every part of their house and they took out every piece of leaven, yeast, and they cleansed it because they knew one seed, one little bit of leaven in a bread would make the bread rise. And that's what you have to look at in your own life. And when you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to fear. I say that because literally you can go inside and out of my life. On my phone, I've got no passwords. I've got no women who are signed up on my phone as a guy. I have no nothing. I've got no pictures, no sites, no camouflage apps, no ghost apps, no nothing, because I can sleep in peace. And when you do that on every part of your life, personal, professional, spiritually, you're good. And then it just gives you that much more confidence. Bring it. I don't care. I told you this story before, and I don't know if we want to get into it, but there's a point in time where somebody sent a letter to my house accusing me of having an affair. And I realized later, which I did not have an affair, that the individual who sent it tried to hurt me. They did it intentionally. Months after we found this whole thing out, my wife said, who never doubted, however, it's human nature when you read something like that.
Right.
She says, it all came down to reaction. I was watching your reaction. And I respect that because at that moment, April 2013, 22nd, if I was, not that I'm counting, if I had something that had happened 5 years before that I never dealt with, it would have come to pass right then and there. Like immediately. I've been audited by the IRS in my kitchen. Within an hour, the IRS agent said, man, you're doing good. Why? Because my wife and I were there. We had all our tax records. We claimed everything. We tithe, and they were amazed because the numbers didn't make sense. But when you back it all up with nothing to hide, nothing to fear, even the IRS gives you the green light. So that's the way I live my life. I got no shame in it. I don't care about what people think when it comes to doing the right thing. And I encourage people to look in their own life and inventory and says, what is that one thing you don't want to come out on the front page? What's that one person you want to be identified with? What's that one text you don't want to be popped up there? What's that one situation going on? Because eventually, and the Bible's right, our sins will always seek us out. And it's never convenient. It always hurts. Don't do it.
Chris, you are amazing. I love your transparency. I love that you are who you are. Like you said, Chris Swanson is the same as doing
nothing to hide, nothing to fear.
Right? A Zoom call than he is speaking in front of 15,000. So with that, with all this being said, I think this is easily one of my favorite interviews. But what does it mean to you? I mean, obviously we're interviewing you on the Fight the Current podcast. What does it mean to you in your life to fight the current?
Yeah. Well, I think if you look by definition, a current means that there's a force coming against you and you either have to go with the current or fight against it. Going with the current is what gets people in trouble. Fighting against the current means that you're going to have to blaze your own path and it's going to take effort. And if you visualize the illustration of going upstream in a current, it's going to take effort. And there's times you're going to be pushed back and you dig a little bit deeper. There's times people are going to be pushing you from behind to say, let's go. There's times you're going to be grabbing some people. That's just life. Don't make an excuse that, oh my gosh, the current against me is overwhelming and has been like that my whole life because that's the way my daddy was and that's the way my mama was. And so I'm just going to go with the flow. No, you fight it. You fight the fact that everybody doesn't think you could do it. You fight the fact that you tried 10,000 times, go try again. So I love the fact that fighting a current, it makes you stronger for the next time. It makes you more confident for the next time. Going with the grain doesn't give you anything. Going against the grain gives you that victory.
Right.
That's awesome.
Cool. So if people listening to this and watching this, you know, on the YouTube video are anything like me, Chris, they're going to be thinking, oh, I just want a little bit more. I want to experience more. Like,
absolutely.
You basically, you're the appetizer. You've whetted their appetite, I guarantee it, to who Chris Swanson is. And I've never seen, I don't think I've seen anyone move a crowd like I've seen you move a crowd.
And, it's so true.
And inspire people. Like at the weekend where we saw you speak, you always speak earliest in the morning. You're like the coffee for everybody. You're everyone's caffeine. So for people who are listening to this, like myself, who want to learn more, who want to experience more of Chris Swanson, get your books, how can we continue to follow you and see all the things you're doing?
Well, first of all, I just appreciate you guys doing this and giving me the honor to do it. I never take an opportunity for granted. I know that there's just one person out there that needed this message, that needed you guys to take the lead and make the podcast and to just say, you know what, we're going to give this message. You know, we may never know if they're suicidal, if they gave up on their marriage, but they listened to this message and they saw what you guys did. So it's not just me, bro. It's you guys doing it just the same. You know, we're carving out time in our day to do this. So I give you much love back. But if they want more of me, remember that I am just a messenger. The message I give is really what you want more of, you know, because I want to be dead one day. I want the message to continue. I want more people to do more things. And so to do that, always seek people who are going to give advice to you that's good advice, not just cotton candy. And that's what I do on all my social media. Through SwansonLeadership.com, through my YouTube channel, of course, Facebook, if you're over 40 and old, but under 40, go Instagram, Chris_Swanson262. You can search me on Instagram. I reach hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people a year through audios and through books and through my social media. And I just love the feedback. Every day I get feedback of people that have listened or watched or read or did something. And to me, it's my mission field. It's what I do. And that's how people can get more. And I will add that I'm just coming into first base, man. I haven't even launched where I'm going to be 5 years from now, 10 years from now. Things are rolling. God's got a master plan. I've always believed I'm going to be a huge voice for people to encourage, to inspire. So that's how you start. But hang on, boys, because I'm just getting up there.
That's awesome.
That's awesome. So yeah, we will also link, put in the description of this video and the podcast, all your links, so the people can continue to follow you. So, hey, Chris, I appreciate your time, man.
Commercial, man. You got to give me a commercial time. I got more products coming. Let me tell you these, right?
Okay, go ahead. Let's talk. You got 30 seconds. 3 minutes. You got it.
All right. Less than 3 minutes. Number one, my new book coming out. It's just in the planning stages, the writing stages. So I said police and endangered species. And it's 21 truths and stories of modern day law enforcement that's going to validate cops that are in the field saying, this is exactly what I wanted to tell people we are. And on the flip side, it's going to tell the citizens, this is exactly the kind of people they are. We are truly an endangered species. You're going to see it in the airports. You're going to want to grab it because it's going to be great stories. It's going to be like those books, but in a more comprehensive understanding of what cops are. Number two, I got a series coming out, a video series called 90 Seconds to Save a Life. Because I'm a medic and I'm still a licensed medic, I've been teaching that all over the place. I realized that people don't know how to save a life. Strokes, seizures, diabetics, heart attacks, you know, CPR. And so I put a video series together that you could watch how just if you've never taken a class before, you never want to go to be a medic or a doctor, but you should learn how to take care of somebody having a heart attack, a stroke, a seizure, CPR. It's a high intensity video. It's like this, teaching you how to do these things. 90 seconds to save a life with a bunch of bonuses about like road rage and human trafficking and overdoses and all that. That's coming out. It's being done, edited in this office by my team. And third is my, what is the third one?
Is your other book?
I already said that. Dang, I got a third one. Oh, my Motivate 365.
Oh, I saw that. I saw that. That's cool.
Every day, 3 minute or less video message that's sent to you via email, and it gives you the day that, you know, what's going on, and an encouraging message and a motivational message to say, hey, this is what you got to bite on. And it's all different topics. It's really fresh, and it's only $7.97 a month. You can go buy that on the website. And what it is just like a little shot of adrenaline every single day, and it gives you challenges. Because you notice in the book, I never give a story without a value lesson. Don't ever give a story. Don't ever, you know, don't ever waste a good opportunity to teach somebody something that they can go away thinking, that was a great story, and I learned this, and now I'm going to go do this, that call to action. Right. So that's what Motivate 365 is, among other things that are going on. There it is.
Well,
2 minutes.
Yeah, you did good. So if people go follow your pages and things like that, they'll see all that stuff, right?
Yeah. You can get Motivate 365, and you get my boot camp and all this. But I just gave a commercial if people wanted more. I just think, man, if they hear this message and that's all they get, then we won.
Hmm. Yeah, amen.
So true. Amen. And who wouldn't want to carry around Chris Swanson every single
in
day?
In your pocket.
In your pocket. For $7.90 whatever a month. That's awesome. Right, man.
Thank you.
That's cheaper awesome. Than Apple Music, cheaper than Spotify. what is it? Cheaper than Netflix or around the same price? So, yeah.
You got this guy.
Hashtag worth it.
It's like 27 cents a day.
Right. That's awesome.
But the bottom line is it's life-changing and does that, so... All right, fellas, you're going to do 100 push-ups today, okay?
All right, you got it.
100 push-ups right there.
I love that. I remember you talked about how that helps you physically and mentally to do 100 push-ups a day. So
yeah.
All right, so everyone listening to this.
That's it.
Push-ups today.
Don't be a slug.
Don't be a slug.
Love it. Thank you, Chris. We appreciate your time.
All right. Hey, thanks, everybody. God bless you, and I'll talk to you guys next round.
You've been listening to the Fight the Current podcast, your guide to living an extraordinary life in an ordinary world. We ask you to subscribe and review this podcast as it helps out a lot. We sincerely hope you've gotten value today, and if so, we would love to hear from you. Check out our Facebook and Instagram pages and give us a shout. Make sure to check out our brand new YouTube channel and subscribe. Keep posted for our next upcoming episodes, and until next time, swim upstream and fight the current.